From Springfield, this is State Week in Review, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
I think this was pure payback for having the Chicago Public Schools let his daughter in after she was rejected.
You didn't pick up the phone and say, Arnie or Ron Huberman, I want your attention on this?
No.
Republican candidate for governor Bruce Rauner says yes, he made a phone call to then superintendent of schools Arnie Duncan so his daughter, moving into the city from Winnetka, could get into Walter Payton College Prep,
which had a waiting list of over 7,000 city teenagers.
I'd like to know who didn't get in because his suburban daughter got in.
That was Kirk Dillard, who is a Republican state senator from Hinsdale, also a candidate for governor, criticizing one of his opponents, businessman Bruce Rauner. The question is, did Bruce Rauner use clout and his wealth to get his suburban daughter into an elite Chicago public school? That topic, plus campaign finance on this week's State Week in Review. I'm Brian Mackey, State House reporter for Illinois Public Radio and WUIS. Bill Wheelhouse is away this week. Joining us on the panel are Charlie Wheeler, director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the Springfield campus of the University of Illinois, also a longtime State House reporter. State House Bureau Chief Amanda Vinicky from WUIS and Illinois Public Radio, and special guest this week, Bernie Schoenberg, political writer and columnist for the State Journal Register in Springfield. Well, Bernie, I'm going to start with you. You had a column this week. It turns out that we heard Bruce denying to Carol Marine on WTTW in Chicago last summer that he had placed a phone call to Arnie Duncan, and he made a similar statement to you, right?
He did. You know, it was September 3rd. It was the day that they offered, they wanted me to talk to Bruce Rauner because he was coming out with his term limits proposal. But because we have seen him so seldom in Springfield, as he has been a candidate on radio, TV, and internet ads, but not in person very much, I asked him questions about some other things. I had heard, you know, and read some things about his alleged contact with Arnie Duncan to try to get his daughter into Payton Prep in Chicago, the very high-quality school by reputation, and I asked him about it, and I said, did you talk to Mr. Duncan about it as part of that conversation? And his response was, I did not. And I asked if he might have left a message for Duncan,
so
and
you,
he
you
left.
Kind of, you pressed him a little bit to see if there was maybe a
right,
particular
I pressed him.
Phrasing.
I, you know, I yeah. said, well, did you leave a message for him? Because it had been pretty clear to me that people had reported that there was this contact. And he said, Bernie, I told you all the facts, and he kind of chuckled. But then this week, when the Sun-Times came out Monday with their front page story about how a year and a half after his daughter got into the school, he made a $250,000 donation to the school. And he did a round of interviews on Chicago TV, which I saw through the wonders of the internet. And, you know, he was basically all three big time reporters in Chicago said, well, Bruce says he made the call to Arnie Duncan, and then they quoted Rauner saying, you know, I would do it again. There's nothing wrong with that, which was in direct conflict with what he had told me. So I looked up my notes on that, and I did have tape and posted it on our website, and it was just an interesting confluence of events. Now, his spokesman, Mike Schrempf, tried to tell me, or did tell me, that, well, he thought the question was, did you ask Arnie Duncan to get your daughter into the school? As if that would be different than asking about the process. But my question did not ask that. It asked, did he talk to Arnie Duncan about this? And he told me directly no, which I don't think helps his credibility at this point.
And just a little bit of the background here. Bruce Rauner lives in Winnetka as one of his many residences, and that's where his daughter lives. She could have gone to New Trier High School, which is one of the great high schools in Illinois, one of the great public schools in Illinois. But he had also purchased a condo in downtown Chicago, and she apparently wanted to go to this Walter Payton College Prep, which is in one of the top schools in the country, as I understand it, top public schools in the country. And apparently she had good test scores, but there was an illness or something. Am I right about that, Bernie, that was keeping her out?
Yes. And even back in September, what Bruce Rauner told me is that his daughter was a very good student and met the qualifications to get into Walter Payton College Prep, but that she had pneumonia in middle school and therefore missed, I think I read somewhere else, it was like 10 days. And one of the three issues on which you could get into that special school, a magnet school in Chicago, was attendance. And if you didn't have perfect attendance, you were basically out. At that time, they had what was called a principal's list, where you could appeal an initial rejection, and the principal of the school had like 5% of the spots could be given with principal's discretion. They have since changed that because they said too much clout was used in various situations, and, you know, public figures, kids, and things like that. But at that time, it was the process. Bruce Rauner did tell me he used the principal's list process. He just denied talking to Arne Duncan about it when now his story has changed and said he did talk to Arne Duncan before and after the situation, but talked to him about process, not with a direct request to get his daughter into the school.
So, Brian, I think you touched on something really important in terms of that New Trier would have been her high school. And, yes, Peyton Prep is one of the top schools in the nation, but it's not as if New Trier is all that far behind.
I mean, New Trier's top two.
Exactly. It's an amazing school. And so that's where this presents twofold issues for Bruce Rauner. It is, well, three. There's the credibility issue, again, of having said one thing and then saying another when the circumstances either force it or when he deems it a more prudent course of action. Number two, that he now appears to have used some of the clout that he has said union bosses do and the disparaging comments in terms of special interests when it is apparent that he has plenty of, you know, special interests and connections to make use of. And then thirdly, that he attempts to present this image with the Carhartt jacket and the $18 watch and such on the heels of a minimum wage debacle, this, you know, multimillionaire then is taking the spot of, I mean, there's a reason that they have this prep academy in the city of Chicago, where Chicago public schools go through a lot of hardships, where a lot of the students may not come from, may come from low-income families, and this is kind of their chance, a way to get out from a more poorly performing school and be able to, you know, go to this prep academy, go to college, and succeed beyond. When New Trier, we don't know why the daughter chose to, you know, wanted to go to Peyton instead of New Trier. But point being that that's a chance that because he had the money to, you know, have a condo and have an alternate residence in the city of Chicago that would have made her eligible, and the phone call and such continues to make him, I think, just look out of touch and exacerbate his wealth.
Yeah, if I may just add briefly, the Sun-Times reported that 353 students got into Peyton that year, but the waiting list was more than 7,000 students. So that is part of what the problem was. Also, Rauner's wife, Mrs. Rauner, Diana, she is the head of the Ounce of Prevention Fund in Chicago. So they did get the condo. They were spending a lot of time downtown. That's what the candidate said, and he also worked downtown.
And it also let him apparently cast a vote for his then buddy and now running away from Mayor Rahm Emanuel. But I wanted to turn to Charlie here, and this is one of the things I think is so interesting. Amanda hit a little bit on this about this idea of the Carhartt jacket and the $18 watch and I'm a common man, and then also that he's going to shake up Springfield. That's the message we've heard in advertising, and this kind of cuts at the core of his entire reason for being a candidate.
I think it does. I think it points out that, once again, there are like two sets of rules, one for the people who are billionaires and one for the rest of us peons. He was in a situation where he did what any parent would do. He tried to get the best thing possible for his daughter. The difference is that he can pick up the phone and call Arne Duncan, who is the head of the Chicago Public Schools, now head of the U.S. Department of Education, and Arne Duncan will take the call. I could call Arne Duncan, and Arne Duncan would say, "Who in the dickens is that?" And if I were lucky, I'd get some third-level intern.
Don't sell yourself short, Charlie.
Yeah, he might pick it up for you, but for different reasons. I don't know if it's because of clout.
And that's kind of the way the system works. And I think the difficulty Rauner has, and Amanda, you touched on this, it goes back to the guy's credibility. Because he denies it. He tells Bernie, "No, I didn't." And he tells Carol Marie, "No, I didn't." And then he admits to the other Chicago reporters later, "Well, yeah, I guess I really did." He would have been better off, I think, using the old Mayor Daley defense.
I don't remember.
I know. I'm dating myself. You guys probably weren't around.
No, that's
at the time.
Yeah, oh,
but Mayor Daley, the first, King Richard J. steered some city insurance business to one of his sons, and he got called out for it. And his response was, and I'll kind of sanitize it for radio, what kind of a dad would I be if I didn't do this to help out my kids however I could? And Mike Reuchel did a legendary column where he talked about Mayor Daley telling his opponents to kiss his mistletoe.
Well, and then we did hear Bruce Rauner
saying, Brian, real quick, can I just say what I had meant, Charlie, was not that I don't remember you and your story. I did not remember that. But what I had meant was a defense that we have seen the latter Mayor Daley use, for example, with Millennium Park was, I don't remember. And at least then you get around it. That's not something we reporters like. And I think that it can be quite clear, there's something to remember. But it is different than lying slash having to put your foot in your mouth later. And it does not lead to these credibility issues. It still looks bad, but there's a defense. When you can say, I don't remember if I called.
And it's like Rauner on the on the minimum wage. Rauner was for cutting it before he was against cutting it before he was for increasing it.
Right. Charlie's alluding there. When you say, I was against it before I was for it, or for it before I was against it, it reminds me of the John Kerry, right, position on the Iraq War back in 2004. And I was reminded of something else. There's a number of fake Twitter accounts that have gone up this week kind of parodying Bruce Rauner. And one of them has a set of flip-flops as its image on the page there. And that was one of the charges used against John Kerry to great effect, that this guy was a flip-flopper because he seemed to have different positions based on what was politically expedient. And you alluded to the minimum wage thing. And I think that, you know, so this does not become the Bruce Rauner show here today. One of the reasons that this might matter is the fundraising disparity that we've seen on the Republican primary. And Amanda, maybe you can talk a little bit about that. We got some additional numbers this week, right?
Exactly. So it was campaign filings, and I unfortunately don't have my list in front of me. So I'm not going to read numbers aloud when they're not there. I'm a reporter and therefore not innately a numbers person. But you saw, yes, some fundraising numbers that showed that Bruce Rauner had put more money into his campaign. We know that it had been about $2.5 million of his own cash, as well as some of those other wealthy insiders that he's had that contributed, but he also spent it. He's been on air introducing himself to voters because he is the unknown. And so other than that, you had State Treasurer Dan Rutherford had some success. He's known as a fairly prolific fundraiser, and that seems to be how he's, you know, spent a lot of his time, is going around and making those calls. Dillard, not so much. He was buttressed somewhat by his lieutenant governor candidate, Jill Tracy, whose own family by marriage also has some wealth, though it has not been the sort of contributions at all to the scale of Bruce Rauner. And then coming in last place, Bill Brady, who it seems as if kind of the Republican establishment had not desired that he really stay in the race. He'd had his chance. Brady says, no, listen, I've had my chance to introduce myself to voters. I'm new and improved, and he still has a conservative base there. So those fundraising numbers, and you know, we can go back and talk on that. Before we go on, I did want to just mention, Brian, I think it is easy it has been kind of Bruce Rauner lately, and there are several reasons for that. And part of it is that the rest of these guys are all politicians who we followed for such a long time. Not that there isn't something new that could break about them. They could have long records of flip-flopping, as we saw, for example, with Dillard and the minimum wage, but it's been votes, and there are kind of some defenses to that. This is Bruce Rauner's first time around, so he's attracting a lot of attention again, because of all of this money, because he has, by and large, unless he needs to, he has not necessarily responded to or given interviews to reporters. So I think you have a lot of journalists very much wanting to set the record straight and do that so that he's not framed entirely by his commercials. And there's kind of – it's easy in that regard because he keeps on flubbing also to such great degrees.
Yeah, and another really quick point, he had said – as if he were trying to control his entire message, that he wouldn't do but five forums with other candidates, forum/debates, and they would all be in February. Well, he did one that the Arlington Heights Daily Herald and I think another sponsor did up in Chicago this week, perhaps in response to all these stories, and it just came out at the end of the week that he's also going to be in the public broadcasting League of Women Voters debate next week. He just decided that Thursday evening, I believe, let the sponsors know. So he had said he would, and perhaps that, again, is a reality check, because it turns out that public stations, radio and TV, including in Chicago and Carbondale and everywhere else in the state, are going to be running that thing next Thursday night.
Yeah, and including, you know, a lot of public radio stations where you might be hearing this show right now. Charlie,
indeed,
is there why would he maybe think this is an advantage to not participate in these things? Is this because he's, you know, battering people overhead just hoping he can skate by on his TV commercials and not have to sort of face the other candidates?
Well, that's traditional. The person who is the front runner, and particularly somebody who has such a monetary advantage as Bruce Rauner, The conventional wisdom is you don't appear on the same stage with your opponents, because that gives them an opportunity to go against you, and it increases their credibility when they're on the same stage with you. But sometimes you have to decide that under the circumstances, it's probably better for me to be there rather than to have the empty chair being addressed and debated and attacked. But the notion that I'm running in front, I got all the money, so I'm not going to, raise the level of my opponents by appearing at the same forum as they do. That's really a long-standing tradition in politics.
I think Rauner's also in a tricky situation. Again, it leads to his inexperience, something that he advertises as a virtue, but could very well leave him stumped on if he's asked about a more arcane part of government. Clearly, he has studied. He is known to be a hard worker. He's obviously a very intelligent man. So maybe he knows pensions at this point inside and out, but some of the different pieces of legislation or areas of state government, hey, he could very well embarrass himself in a debate because he hasn't been around for decades like the other three Republican candidates.
Well, as we all know, there are literally hundreds of issues that come up every legislative session that every governor faces right at the beginning of his administration. And unless you've been there for a while and studied it, you're not going to be well-versed. And so in his case, he certainly would not know as much about all of the issues as the other candidates, all of whom, the other three, two of whom are current senators, Bill Brady and Kirk Dillard. Dan Rutherford, the state treasurer, was in the legislature, in the Senate, and the House. So they're very conversant with all the topical issues in Illinois in a way that someone on the outside, even a successful businessman, now he might know about pensions because he got rich investing teachers' retirement system money. He might know about education because of his activity with charter schools and using his connections to get his daughter into Peyton. But I'm wondering, what does he know about fracking? What does he know about concealed carry? What does he know about drones? What does he know about divorce law? What does he know about tort reform? What does he know about workers' comp and unemployment insurance?
I wonder what he knows about. I wonder what he knows about motorcycle helmet laws, because I remember that was sort of an infamous episode down here in Springfield where he made a big point of riding his motorcycle to the Republican day at the state fair, at least the county. You know, party people's breakfast that morning, and we tried to ask him, did you wear a helmet? And, you know, what is your stance on the helmet law? And he just, like a machine, refused to answer. I'm not here to talk about that.
He did say the next week, Brian, that he was against a helmet law, as is A-Bait, the big motorcycle group in Illinois that's very politically powerful. But he said that at that Republican day at the fair, he just wanted to stay on message and not deal with other issues that day, which was his response to many questions, which I think, again, showed a naivete as a first-time candidate, because reporters in Springfield perhaps don't like to hear that.
Well, and I recall the staying on message. I recall, and this again goes back years, covering a debate between two candidates for governor. And after the debate, the one candidate was just really nonplussed because his opponent had responded to any of the questions. And this particular candidate, he was asked about, tort reform. And he had a detailed explanation about his stance on that issue. The other candidate was asked, and it was like, well, Charlie, I'm glad you asked me that question. Now let me tell you about this. And he went back to the three talking points, and it was like that for the whole debate.
Well, we're going to have to see if that is the strategy that's adopted in the debates that are going to be coming in the coming weeks. We'll hear a lot more about that. Coming up on the program, union endorsements this week, and Governor Quinn will have an opponent, at least on paper, in the Democratic primary. You're listening to State Week in Review.
Support for State Week in Review comes from the Illinois State Bar Association, whose activities include proposing and shaping legislation, educating the public, and supporting the courts and the rule of law. Information at IllinoisLawyerFinder.com.
You're listening to State Week in Review. On the panel this week, Charlie Wheeler, Amanda Vinicky, and special guest Bernie Schoenberg, political columnist and political writer at the State Journal Register here in Springfield. I'm Brian Mackey, filling in for Bill Wheelhouse. Well, Bernie, we had some big union endorsements this week. What was the big story coming out of that, if you can narrow it down at all?
Well, I guess the big one was the Judy Bartopinka, who is a Republican statewide office holder. The state comptroller was endorsed in her primary bid, and the Democrat running against her, now Lieutenant Governor Sheila Simon, who's running for comptroller, was not. And that is just interesting because, of course, Sheila Simon is daughter of Paul Simon, a great champion of labor from the past, and Sheila Simon has a good labor record. But Judy Bartopinka has also done a significant amount to work with the unions in her office and back legislation that unions like. She has been very moderate on certain social issues. She's, you know, been in the Pride Parade in Chicago and advocated gay rights and gay marriage for a long time, which is, you know, now passed as the law of Illinois that will take effect this summer. And she ended up with an endorsement at this point from the AFL-CIO. So I think that was a key so far.
And, of course, this is for the primary where they don't have contestants. You know, and so it's interesting because the AFL-CIO could, of course, make a different sort of endorsement in the general election. But at the primary stage, to have backed the Republican Topinka and not the Democrat Simon instead of they could have very well, for example, endorsed both at this point in time. And that's why it's particularly significant.
And you never know what will happen this summer, right? I mean, they could choose to go a different way.
Exactly. That could will change. Yeah. Something else that was interesting out of the endorsements was also that the AFL-CIO did choose to back Governor Pat Quinn. And, of course, Quinn has championed the pension overhaul, was quick to sign it, and that is something that labor has steadfastly been against and exposes. We talk a lot about, you know, the Republican divide, but I think in this regard, Democrats' main allies, the unions, have a major split as well. And that is from groups such as maybe, you know, the AFL-CIO is more of an umbrella, but you have a lot of the trades unions that like what Governor Pat Quinn, because he has been the governor that was able to give them a lot of money in projects through capital funding. And it is the, you know, other unions like AFSCME that are very upset over the pension deal. So it exposes a split there. And I kind of would maintain it's to me, this loving of Quinn in terms of the money for capital construction money is, I don't know. If you look back, Quinn, the major Illinois capital bill was passed right as Quinn became governor. And it had been needed during most of Blagojevich's tenure, most people would maintain. It was just that Blagojevich was so poorly liked by other legislators and so not trusted that they wouldn't pass a major statewide construction plan. So really, no matter who would have been governor, I would say it would have passed as long as it wasn't Rod Blagojevich. We were going to get a capital bill no matter what then. And that is something that Quinn has been able to take advantage of and still is. And really, for much of Quinn's time in office, really until the end of 2013 when he had successes with, you know, same-sex marriage and the pension bill that he's, you know, applauding himself for the most part, that capital bill was what he was able to ride most of his governorship on. And again, it would have happened with or without him, I think.
Yeah, there's a lot of ribbons you can cut with, what was it, $30
billion? Mm-hmm.
Also, the AFL-CIO issued a statement that we oppose Bruce Rauner, which we don't want to talk more about him. But Rauner, from the very beginning of his race, like the first time that I interviewed him, the day he announced by video and then got on the phone with me, it was either that day or the next, did not let me tape record that one. I think I understand why. But he said at that time, you know, I'm taking on the union bosses who are corrupting the state, and they own the Democrats and they own a lot of Republicans. So even though he claims to like rank and file members of unions, but wants a lot of things they might not like 401k style, you know, pension from here on forward for all public employees. He has taken on union bosses in particular hard in almost everything he's done, even in his paid ads, which is harsher language than usual. And the AFL-CIO has responded in kind. Rauner probably likes that because it makes he likes to be combative, and I'm going to take him on. But I'm not sure in Illinois, which has had a pretty good union kind of culture, not total, but there's a history that he's taking on here, and we'll see where that goes.
Well, you know, interesting. Point two that I would point out is that particularly in central and southern Illinois, a lot of the members of Ask Me, the American Federation of State, County, Municipal Employees, are Republicans at heart and social conservatives at heart.
Well, Amanda, I want to turn to you as we're coming up on the end of the show here. Just a couple of minutes left. But it turns out Governor Quinn will have an opponent, Teo Hardeman, former head of Ceasefire. There was a challenge to his ballot, to his position on the ballot, but he is going to show up. What happened this week with that?
And so there had been two challenges. One, the signatures to Teo Hardeman's petitions itself, and a hearing officer with the State Board of Elections had said, no, this appears fine. But then what had kind of really mucked up the waters gets into a voter discrepancy issue with the registration of Teo Hardeman's lieutenant governor candidate, Brunell Donald, and whether because of the if she would be able to stay on the ballot. In Illinois, for as we've previously discussed, for the first time, is now requiring governor candidates to also have a running mate on the ballot. And so it put into question, if the lieutenant governor were to be knocked off the candidate, what would that do to the governor candidate? And it ended up not being resolved at all, something that, interestingly, when I spoke with the State Board of Elections head, he said, you know, it's fine. I'm not commenting on this particular case, but we like it when cases go to court as we expect this one would have, because then there's a precedent. Then we have rules to follow. So this remains an open question for the future. But Teo Hardeman says the best news in the world that he got when it turned out Quinn's attorneys, it was the Quinn campaign who had been the ones that were challenging Teo Hardeman and his lieutenant governor candidate's petitions, withdrew. The Quinn campaign says that that is because they did not want to get into a protracted court battle and just thought that that wasn't the wisest course of action. I'm guessing that it also had to do with some politics in that it was lending more credibility and airtime to Hardeman, the former director of Ceasefire, who at his last campaign filing had $500 in his campaign account compared to Quinn's $4.5 million. And Quinn wants to basically act like Hardeman is non-existent and this was making him a presence.
Well, I think, yeah, what is it, that like 1% of his – of the governor's – Hardeman has like 1% of the amount of money that the governor has to spend?
Exactly.
Yeah.
Well,
it'd
be less than that, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it's a percentage of that.
Yeah. Well, as Amanda said, we're reporters. We're not expecting mathematicians.
No, I think I figured it out. The last filing, at least, it was 1%.
Right. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, that is unfortunately our time for this edition of State Week. So I want to thank Bernie Schoenberg from the State Journal Register for being on our show. You can get a podcast of this show by going to WUIS.org. You can also find us on iTunes. The production assistance for our program today was provided by Bob Meyer. For Charlie Wheeler, Amanda Vinicky, and Bernie Schoenberg, I'm Brian Mackey.
You've been listening to State Week in Review, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week in Review is produced in the state capitol by public radio station WUIS. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.